Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. We are now bringing on Reginald Clemens, who is going to be speaking on incarcerated individuals and their mentorship with those who are soon to be released, called Reentry 2030. We are now welcoming our host, Reginald Clemens.
Thank you, Leona, for that introduction. Hello, everybody. I want to thank you for tuning in to another episode, another tutorial, and another opportunity for you to ask questions concerning reentry 2030 and any other issues or topics relating to criminal justice reform. What reentry 2030 is, and if you want to call in, please call 657-383-1630. That's 657-383-1630. So what reentry 2030 is an opportunity to address criminal justice reform where the rubber meets the road. And when it comes down to is recidivism and sentence reduction.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Because people have been receiving excessive sentences, and when it comes to criminal justice reform, people are not being properly rehabilitated, and that's proven and panned out to be true across the worldwide, because the United States recidivism rate in comparison to many other countries, notably Norway, who has a recidivism rate of 10%, where 90% of their people do not come back to prison. And that's due in large part to their attitude towards incarceration. Their attitude towards incarceration, mass incarceration, is not to have a system of mass incarceration for profit, but to start rehabilitating prisoners as soon as they come in. Now, with the Reentry 2030 program that is encouraged and supported by the governor of Missouri, Mike Carson, and the director of the Missouri Department of Corrections and Precise, it's a collaborative effort between prisoners and the prison administration and governor to rehabilitate prisoners individually and give us clear ground and a clearance and clear ground to effectuate the rehabilitation that we already do in a peer-to-peer basis. I've been locked up for 32 years, going on 33 in April. And most of my rehabilitation has come from fellow prisoners counseling me, giving me advice, steering me in the right direction. And then the classes that I've taken are oftentimes facilitated and taught by other prisoners. Now, what we are doing with this show, Reginald Clemens Speaks on Reentry 2030, is we're letting different facilitators talk about the different classes that they teach in order to get that individual recognition of what it is that we're accomplishing and what we're doing and what the contribution that we're making, and also to allow society to know what type of work we're doing in here. I'm saying, I want my family to be safe. I don't want somebody that's pissed off and angry for being in a home, being an ag sick, being dogged out, abused, to be released into society and go and hurt somebody, my niece, my nephew, my daughter, my son, my granddaughter, my grandson, or my mother, father, grandparents. I'm saying the people that I love, my siblings, they mean everything to me. So I don't want not just my family, but I don't want anybody's family members to get hurt. Especially now, I'm sober and I'm conscious and I've re-obtained and healed from whatever scars and wounds I once had and have reclaimed my humanity. My compassion is real. And I reach out to people, and I reach out to other prisoners and encourage them to embrace their compassion. And that's what we do, is we help one another reattain our humanity. I'd like to introduce Zachary and let him introduce himself and tell you about himself and tell you about the classes that he teaches, some of the things he's done, and to rehabilitate himself or gain rehabilitation.
Hello. How's everyone doing? My name is Zachary Smith. I was arrested at 19. Three trials later, I was sentenced to life without parole, being convicted of first-degree murder and armed criminal action. My first year or two, I got into a little bit of trouble because of my destructive habits and patterns, limiting beliefs. And after a few stints in ADTIG, I decided, you know what, this isn't working, and started devoting my time to improving myself. I started to study the law, and while I was learning the law, I also had some legal issues concerning finances. During the process of my incarceration, my father died and he left me a small inheritance.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Under the Missouri Incarceration Reimbursement Act, they can recoup costs for your incarceration. So they filed suit, and I began to litigate that. And I eventually prevailed, and I filed a Chapter 7 bankruptcy and discharged the debt. So I learned that it took a few years, but I learned that I could be successful with my legal endeavors if I was just patient and persistent. And I also started to write books when my conviction was affirmed in federal court. I sat in my cell and I looked at this pile of paperwork and I thought, what am I going to do with all this stuff? If all my pills are gone, this paperwork is basically worthless. But I remembered as I was working as a law clerk that offenders used to come to the law library and they would ask me for, you know, hey, you got forms for this, you got forms for that. And I would say, no, there's no forms for federal court when you litigate a 2254 petition. And so I would draft out the initial pleading form and give it to them, and they would make copies of it and pass it around. And it kind of gave me an idea. So what I did was I took all the paperwork that I prepared, and I turned it into a book, and I described from each step in the process of what a prisoner had to do in litigating a case on their own. And it culminated in a series of legal books called Smith Guides, and they addressed a number of legal issues that prisoners
you have 1 minute left
go through in the appellate process.
You don't want to waste your 1 minute left not saying anything, so we're going to let the audience know this is going to end for a few minutes, but they will be calling back in to finish what he's already started to talk about. So audience, let's be patient. As we know, these are individuals incarcerated who are trying to do the best they can to get the word out about the work they are doing to rehabilitate those who are soon to be released. So we are going to be...
The caller has hung up.
We will be having them calling back in again so that they can finish the conversation which they were saying. You know, it's very difficult for those that are incarcerated, and I know that they've made their mistakes, but we also have to look at the fact that we are all sinners in some way or another, and sometimes people deserve a second chance, especially when they're trying to do the right thing behind those prison walls. Many of them have been abused, many of them have been deprived, violated, and there are many that have committed suicide. And it's all because we don't take the time to listen or help those behind the walls, and they don't have oversight over the overseers. We have to keep this in mind as well. Unfortunately, there are people who have been victims before becoming offenders, and there are victims out in the communities. So we want to try to hear all sides. We want to be neutral and try to look at all as human beings. Again, our host is coming back on again. So please feel free to call in. Feel free to call in and ask questions or give feedback or whatever you want to do. But this is your opportunity to speak out. So we are once again inviting you to call in, ask questions, provide feedback, and we are now going to bring the host back into the show, Reginald Clements and his team.
383-1630.
Can you repeat that, please?
657-383-1630.
Okay.
Okay, back to partial to the interruption. As I was saying that I returned my stepping stone or my problems into stepping stones and started to help other offenders with their legal problems by writing and publishing these books. I ended up publishing 5 books. I published a book on Federal Habeas Corpus 2254 petitions. I published a Smith Guide to State Habeas Corpus Relief for State Prisoners, one for second successive Federal Habeas Corpus petitions, and one for executive clemency. And, of course, the one that I was speaking of before about the Chapter 7 bankruptcy, these guys were having issues with not only Myra, but when you or say you're in a halfway house or you're out on parole, they charge intervention fees and monitoring fees. Well, a bankruptcy discharge will also discharge those debts. What they do is they put the debt on an offender's account. So when money is sent, the state would take it. And these guys, they didn't have any money other than what family and friends sent them, so they couldn't buy certain things that they need. And the Chapter 7, I put the forms in the back of the book, so all they had to do was rip out the forms and prepare them and send them into the court. And so it alleviated, you know, a lot of back and forth with the courts, like, you know, you got to ask for forms. It just made them available. And since then, I took the money, some of the royalties that I received after I'd gotten a bankruptcy discharge, and I started to educate myself and get degrees. I earned a paralegal degree with distinction from Blackstone Career Institute, along with several other advanced degrees in real estate law, business and corporate law, and wills, trust, and estates law. I am currently incarcerated at the Jefferson City Correctional Center, and I am currently a facilitator in training for the 2030 Reentry Program. I am also actively lobbying for Missouri legislators to raise the age for parole consideration of those sentenced to life without parole to under the age of 21. It's currently at anybody that's under 18 that was sentenced to life without parole may see the parole board after 25 years. And there is a movement to raise the age to 25 and under. I had just proposed legislation, and I sent a proposed bill to several legislators to raise the age to under 21. I thought that would be an appropriate age, that after 25 years that you'd be eligible for parole. And that is what I've been currently working on. The session hasn't started yet, so I've just been making copies and sending them out, trying to find a sponsor. when you propose bills to your state legislator in Missouri, whether it be a state representative or a state senator, you need a sponsor, one of those, to put their name on the bill and basically...
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
I have a question. You mentioned to sponsor a bill for age 21 and under.
Uh-huh.
And we have advocates...
21.
And we have advocates all over the country right now that are trying to reduce it from 25 and under. So isn't that kind of like in contrast to what the advocates around the country are doing? Even families against mandatory minimums, and also the Justice Department, the Department of Justice is actually looking at lowering the incarceration rates, but they're also looking at reducing all sentences across the board, doing away with the death penalty, and also doing away with life sentencing. I don't know how much informed you are there, but I can send you documentation as well if you'd like to provide the information. But what we want to do, as I was trying to do, was advocate to abolish life sentencing before the Department of Justice came out with their information. I was trying to get everyone to try to rally for abolishing life sentencing, and the death penalty focus, which is the coalition or the organization to abolish death penalty, had asked if it was possible to help them abolish the death penalty prior to that life sentencing, and they would work with us to abolish life sentencing. So there's a lot of people that are out to try to do the same thing, but they're all going into different directions. And so these are some of the issues. Right now, under the age of 21 has already been passed. It's already been approved. So again, I think that more information needs to be researched on some of these issues.
That's a good point. What the issue is we have several different states, and each state has their own legislative branch. In Missouri, it's more conservative. And being as conservative as they are, they're not going to support a progressive bill, which would be 25 and under. Even though the science supports it, that's just the facts. That's just the way certain states operate. Whereas if it was California or New York or somewhere else that's more of a liberal state, then yes, that these changes are taking place and the legislative are
I'm glad you're speaking on this, because this is something that's been an issue for years. And this is one of the things I try to promote, are people to come together to try to make some consistency in this country. Because every state, as you say, every state operates differently. The federal government manages the whole country for federal prisoners. But for state prisoners, as a social worker, and I say this all the time, a family, working with families who have so much inconsistency going on in the homes, creates a lot of havoc, chaos, attention deficit disorders, and hypertension deficit disorders get escalated. I look at the same thing in this country with the way these states are operating, all different. We even have a government right now who is so divided, they're acting like children in high school or elementary school. And these are some issues that are not going to get addressed too soon. So audience, listen to what this young man is saying, what he is talking about with the operations in every state. It's inconsistent, it's different, it's difficult, and it's right now, even with the division we have in our government, it's not helping anyone, no one incarcerated and no one in the communities. So again, I'm going to pass this on to the speaker and listen to what he has to say, because he's making so much sense.
Sure.
Sorry.
Caller has hung up.
He will be calling back again. This is another case where this is another issue that needs to be addressed with the Department of Corrections in the communications. People, when they call in, should not have to be interrupted by recordings throughout the conversation and then having to continuously call back. If they are paying for their calls through Securus or Globaltel or whomever, they should be allowed to at least speak as long as they have time out of their cells to be able to speak. There's so much going on in our penal system that needs to be looked at, needs to be addressed. And again, I'm hoping that everybody will listen to what they are hearing so that they know.
There's a free call from an offender at the Jefferson City Correctional Center.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded to accept this.
Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Okay.
Yeah, you raise a very good point, because a lot of people don't really know how the law works and how certain standards are applied from state to state. And when it comes to, we'll just say the death penalty, for example, Roper versus Simmons, it wasn't until a bunch of states reached a certain level where they're saying that society's standards of decency say that the death penalty for 17 and under was inappropriate. And until all of these states reach a certain level of that, the United States Supreme Court won't grant a writ of certiorari and hear these issues. And I think that's not something that society should accept. You shouldn't have to wait 20, 30, 40 years for the courts to catch up to what is going on in society.
Exactly. I'd like to add something else to the death penalty. It makes no sense whatsoever for our government to execute people, for executing people. It's a mixed message going out to the youth, to the young people, even to the elderly. It's a mixed message. No one should be killing anyone if that's the way the government looks at it. No one should be killing anyone. So why would you show that kind of example to society by killing somebody that has killed somebody? It doesn't make sense. I want to say one other thing, that this is how we have in our country so inconsistent and so inappropriate. People celebrate right now Halloween. We have to, the main place that everyone goes is to the city of Salem, Massachusetts, where they killed many, many so-called witches back in the days in the 1700s or 1800s. Now they use that as a celebration. They use that as a tourist attraction. Are they proud of what they've done? Because they don't know today, with all the new technology, with all the recent findings, they don't know today if those people they executed were actually witches or if they were human beings, which everybody is a human being. So listen to what you're hearing, audience, and pass it on, because we have a lot of things going on in this country that need to be reevaluated, reassessed, and rethought of when it comes to the penal system as well.
Yeah, history repeats itself. How you bring up the Salem Witch Project trials, and there's been a big controversy over it, that they basically hung a lot of people, innocent people. And in today's society, we are coming up on scientific information that proves people's innocence, and you're just now starting to see that. But there's been a lot of people that's executed and accused of crime.
Exactly.
They didn't commit.
Exactly. Later found innocent.
Right. And in this context, you are at a disadvantage. So if you don't follow something timely, then
this call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
And the claims are never heard. Just to give an example, I had filed a declaratory judgment because in Missouri they just passed a bill called, it's a 547-031. If anybody knows or heard of a guy named Kevin Strickland, he was the guy that was incarcerated for 43 years and was just exonerated. And because of this bill, the prosecutor was able to file a motion to set aside his conviction. But the Missouri State Attorney General's office fought real hard to keep him in prison. But eventually the circuit court let him go. But the statute says that the prosecutor may file if there's evidence of actual innocence or wrongful conviction. a lot of people has filed and tried to get the prosecutor's offices in Missouri to consider wrongful convictions, and they say no. And they are saying that it's discretionary. If somebody's rights is violated, it should never be discretionary, and a prosecutor should be obligated by law, have a duty to correct a wrongful conviction, just the same as they would have to do for a person who is innocent. So this is what the declaratory judgment I had filed is basically arguing in my case, that the prosecutor withheld evidence and they have a duty to correct that. Well, when they denied it, I filed a notice of appeal. The court clerk took my notice of appeal, and instead of filing it, she sent it back to me, saying that I didn't send it to the appropriate office, that I should have sent it to the Court of Appeals, which this was wrong, that I wasn't supposed to send it to the Court of Appeals. The statute says, the rule says that I'm to send it to the trial court. And if it was required to go to the civil records office, then she could have walked it down there. It's in the same building. But to send it back to me from there to where I'm at, it takes about 4 to 5 days mail. And I only have 10 days to file this notice of appeal. And these are kind of procedures that they like to play. Of course, I can file a motion and ask to file it out of time and argue what I'm, you know, that I wasn't responsible for this court clerk's error. But this is, tends to wear a person down when they're fighting for their rights, and then they are poor and they have to litigate cases on their own.
One good thing we know is that our legislative members, many of them already know what's going on in that case, and they're designed, the Department of Corrections around the country, they're designed to do exactly what they did with you, to try to make matters worse so that people are not getting their material, their documentation out at an appropriate time to the appropriate people, even when there's lawsuits filed. I want to say there was a prisoner who filed a civil rights suit sometime back, about 7 years ago, and he was in the middle of the lawsuit when the department officials put him in the hole and filed a motion to have the case dismissed. And once it was dismissed, they let him out of the hole. But these are the kind of things that happen around the country. You have documentation you're trying to get out, and they have a way of misdirecting, redirecting it to somewhere else, or they have a way to slowly or mysteriously have it disappear. So I'm glad you're bringing that out as well.
Right. I mean, there are a few people that are trying to make changes. Like we had Governor Greitens. I don't know if anybody heard about the scandal with him, but he ended up resigning. But prior to him resigning, him being a humanitarian, he commuted a lot of people's sentences, and he went by himself basically to the women's prison, Chillicothe Correctional Center, and walked a woman out of there by himself after he committed her sentence. I've never heard of governors doing that. The governor that we have now, he has made some changes and allowed for the director of DOC now, who came from, I guess, South Carolina, and she was required to reduce the prison population down there. And we have seen some pretty good things since she's been here. We got our tablets. We got to talk. We have the phone app on there so you can talk on the phone in your cell, because that was a big issue. You couldn't communicate with your family when there's four phones and everybody wants to use it.
That is good.
It created a lot of problems. But that was one of the things that she brought, and it was positive change. You're starting to see things. It's a slow process, but it's come along. Some of these people are actually starting to see that the punishment is not the answer to corrections.
No.
It's just a slow process.
As some have said, it's a slow death. It's a slow death. They have said, a lot of people, and not only advocates and family members, but even people that have learned through all the information that they have gathered, they have learned that this is exactly what it is. A life sentence is a second death penalty, and the manipulation, all the things that occur in the Department of Corrections around the country that are not seen because there is no oversight of the overseers.
Right.
So the information you and Reginald and the others are sharing, and this has to continue, and this is why I have people incarcerated coming on as much as possible, so that they can let the people on the outside actually know for a fact what goes on behind those prison walls. And it's torture. It's pure torture. I interview Mariam Jacobs from the Netherlands at least a few times a month or every couple of months. She's a psychosocial therapist and an advocate for the incarcerated. She works in a prison voluntarily in the Netherlands. And she wrote a book called Suspended Values in Concentration Camps and Prisons, Comparing the United States Prisons to Concentration Camps. These are people from out of the country that have been coming on the show to talk about the inappropriateness of mass incarceration, of the programs they offer, of the treatment that they have with the incarcerated, the prison conditions. These are all things that people in this country need to know about. And unfortunately, a lot of people in this country that know are afraid to speak out, which is sad.
I've been incarcerated for 28 years, and I have never seen what I am seeing now, though. I mean, with this reentry 2030, there are some positive things happening. And the administration is a disadvantage for whatever reason because of the job growth or lack of.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
In the Department of Corrections anymore, so there's a shortage of staff. And when there's a shortage of staff, there's where a lot of resources and programs and things are limited. But here, it's basically hands-off. It's like, hey, if you guys want to do it, you guys are going to behave and help each other and program and teach each other, then we're all for it. And they will come in and they will teach a few classes. But for the most part, it's facilitators like myself and Reginald Griffin and a few others that are stepping up and teaching what we learned since we've been incarcerated, so that the guys that haven't been in prison for very long are able to correct their behavioral problems so they don't come back and they don't continue to be a revolving door, and then they come back with longer sentences in this prison. A juggernaut continues. We want them to shut prisons down and give people hope and inspire them, even though we ourselves don't have a lot of opportunities. Like myself, I have life without parole, so I have to create hope for myself, and by doing so, I create hope for other people. I have not given up, and you see that.
I'd like to have you remember one thing, and what is your first name again?
Zachary,
and you have it. Zachary's in the Bible. We have to remember there's a higher power than any power whatsoever in this world today. And that higher power can perform miracles down here on earth as well as everywhere else. So I believe strongly that he is working, and many don't know it right now because they don't see it. But I'll tell you, if the government shuts down as it is planning to do, crime is going to be on the rise even more so, and there's going to be more people going into the prisons. So we have to have a society that is smart enough or sensible enough or intelligent enough to know that they need to start emptying the prisons, not refilling them or adding to them. And most of you that have spent more than 20, 25, 30, 35, 40 years in prison deserve to be out, because you're the best role models that they have these days, whether they know it or not. All of you have paid your dues that have served that kind of sentence, and all of you can be an asset to people in the communities, because these people out in the communities now committing crimes are doing much, much worse, much, much worse than we can ever believe. So just go and let the people know exactly what you and the rest of them are doing. And audience, I hope you have that intelligence that our government does not seem to have.
Right. I mean, since I've seen when the stimulus money, every prisoner got, you know, $3,200. And when I received mine, I bought me a couple pair of glasses, and the other, I started writing to lawyers and asking if they would set up a trust for me. And I invested that money, is what I did with mine. And a lot of guys, they just blew through it. So when they get out, they don't have money to do anything. They'll be a dependent on their family and friends and all of that. There's a lot of guys in here that's done what I did, and if they were released today, they could, like I said, I could buy a car, rent me an apartment, buy me clothes, and I could sustain myself for several months on the, you know, royalty checks and the investments that I made. And I tried to encourage other guys to do that and teach them about, excuse me, about investing their money as opposed to just spending it.
A lot of these men coming out now in women, but I still work with a lot of the incarcerated around the country. But I wanted to say a lot of them coming out now have already started to prepare. There's one even in Massachusetts who is starting a T-shirt business, and he's already started the paperwork. He's already started the name of the T-shirts is going to be in favor of advocacy work. But these are the things that are coming out. Some of them have already started writing their books. A lot of people that are soon to be released, and even those that have been in for years and are still incarcerated, like yourselves, are doing good. And let's not give the credit to where credit does not belong. Our taxpayer dollars may be going to the Department of Corrections nationwide, but a lot of these things that are being done in the prisons are being done voluntarily by the incarcerated, and many of them, like you say, are rehabilitating themselves. So give credit where it belongs. And look at releasing, because once all of you, not all of you, and I'm letting the audience know, there are some that can never be rehabilitated. You know, gang members that unfortunately, and what the department does is they put rivals against one another because they want to see all this chaos. This justifies the inappropriateness of life and life without parole and death penalty sentencing.
Yeah, and I appreciate people like you that they give us an opportunity to talk to the public and tell them basically who we are and what we're about so they can see for themselves. Because you look at shows like Lockup and you just think there's a bunch of chaos stuff going on all the time. But if you've seen the way we operate here, it's a community and everybody tries to look after each other. Of course, there's always disputes and this and that stuff going on, but that's life. But we do try to have morals and instill good qualities in each other.
I'd like to ask one more question. I'm going to shut up.
I
have a tendency to be. I want your thoughts on this. I always say that there needs to be incentives for doing good. When there's a fight on a block, on any block in a prison, all the individuals on that block get punished. They all get locked in, which is wrong. I think that when somebody commits a crime while in the prison, when somebody starts a fight, troublemakers or whatever, they need to punish them. But they also should provide incentives for those who were not involved. I think that every prisoner should be categorized appropriately. People should be incarcerated and housed on blocks and units of people that have done the same thing that they have done. And they need to, even with law enforcement and with the prison administration, I always say if there's no oversight, they should be defunding. If they're defunding, they should be giving incentives for the Department of Corrections when they do good. If the guards and officials are interacting appropriately with the prisoners, then they should be given incentives, more pay. But they should not be given raises and giving all this funding until they start seeing some positive things happening in the prisons between the interaction between the staff and the individuals who are incarcerated. And prisoners should be included in incentives. They should also be rewarded for any good that they're doing.
Calls from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Well, it's true that you can motivate somebody with a carrot or a stick, but the carrot is always a better motivator.
Yes.
If they were to start passing some legislation where they give good time credit to guys that earn it by taking classes and getting their education, then I think that you would see also a bigger change in the Department of Corrections nationwide.
You have 1 minute left.
The Department of Corrections seems to let people think that you're getting all that education behind those prison walls. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. They have targeted individuals and prevented individuals from actually participating in any work programs or any educational programs, so that those individuals will not have anything to show for the time that they've been incarcerated, if and when they get the opportunity to go up for parole. These are only some of the issues that are not talked enough about. They're not, because prisoners are being denied and deprived of rehabilitation. These are just some of the things that go on that people are not aware of. I know a lot of you think, or maybe thought at one time, that people deserve to be punished after being punished by getting a life sentence or death penalty. But that sentence alone is punishment enough. They should not be deprived of other things once they go in. They should not be deprived of education or work. They should be allowed to live in the community now that they are forced to live in for life, and that is the penal system. If they're going to be forced to be in there, at least allow them to live like anybody on the outside when it comes to education and work programs that they are being paid and funded to provide individuals that are incarcerated. They should be able to allow these things. We are going to bring our
whole... offender at the Jefferson City Correctional Center.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded. To accept this call, thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Okay, we are back with our host and team.
What's that?
I'm letting the audience know that you're back, and I will let you continue. I'm sorry I interrupted so many times.
Oh, that's fine. It's fine. One of the things that I've seen a lot of since I've been in this setting, as well as just throughout my incarceration, is a lot of guys, they suffer from not having social skills, and the social skills is very important. And a lot of times when in society, you learn social skills through in your schools. And if an individual doesn't go to school, it's kind of hard for them to learn these skills. And so we've been implementing programs and classes to teach that. One of the classes that I facilitate is building healthy relationships. And these guys, they get a lot out of that because sometimes they don't understand how their selfishness makes people not want to communicate with them while they're in prison. And they lose friends and family support because of that. And we're helping change that. Another class, it's a core class that I help, is on the substance abuse. There is definitely a need for that. I mean, even in society, there is a lot of drug abuse. I mean, when you've got drugs just flooding in from border to border, and these pharmaceutical companies just making more and more drugs, they kind of spill over into the prisons, and it acts as a babysitter. But you see a lot of sadness in the people coming through, and they look for anything to alleviate their pain. And they will just get high. A lot of people just don't have any hope. I've seen a lot of prisoners do drugs and OD and commit suicide, and it's a pretty ugly time in the Department of Corrections. They are currently changing the policy on us receiving books. We used to be able to have books and mail, and so now everything is on the tablet, basically. So communication is very important, and knowledge and information is very important. And any time that something is limited, it makes it hard for a person to rehabilitate and reintegrate back into society and become a productive member. future classes that are getting ready to be implemented here, just to teach people basic computer knowledge. I mean, just even setting up an email would probably be a challenge for me, or to go to a gas station and use one of them gas cards. That's not something that that was out there when I was free. Cell phones. The cell phone that I had was one of those big brick Motorola phones, and I still had a pager. And now these cell phones, they basically, you need one for everything. And I'm hearing that the Department of Corrections is talking about, because they have an issue with counts not being timely, and routine is very important in prison. When you don't have routine, it causes anxiety, because these guys, they want to get on a routine, but then it's like the door's supposed to open so I can get my shower, so I can get rec, so I can do other things, and the door doesn't open. I'm locked down all day because they can't get the count together. And that has been a big issue from several of the prisons that I've been into. But they're talking about giving us a bracelet, basically, and it monitors where we're at all times, and it's supposed to help with counts. I don't particularly like that idea, but that is an invention that they are attempting to integrate. I don't know if they are doing it in other states or where that idea originated from, but that is something they are trying to correct from their end when it comes to giving us, you know, the proper time to do what we need to do in.
Is that in the prisons, or is that when they come out? Because I know they have the ankle bracelets for people that are released, for many.
Well, that's in the prison they're getting ready to do that with.
Oh, okay.
A few guys is like, okay, if you can monitor me in the prison, couldn't you just easily monitor me on the street? Why do I have to continually be locked up then?
Exactly.
And there are a few older offenders, because they've been locked up so long, and they started to have the health problems. And after a certain point, you kind of phase out of crime. And these guys are still incarcerated. They do have a law in Missouri that says that if you're 70 years or older, you're only required to serve 40% before you're eligible for parole. One sad thing, that I used to be a medical quarter, and there was a guy, I can't remember how old he was, he's 50-something, and he had Alzheimer's and a few other health problems, and he was not remember things, and he started falling down and hurting himself. And he had, like, a couple months to go. And when he was given a medical parole, his family wouldn't take him, because they didn't want to either deal with the problem, or they didn't have financial ability to keep him in a home or whatever it was. But he ended up dying in prison. And that was a sad thing for somebody to die in prison when they didn't have to.
Exactly.
And I don't know if this is a problem in other states or other prisons. I'd imagine that it is.
We have, in Massachusetts, we have incarcerated individuals who are in their 80s, in wheelchairs, some of them terminally ill. As you say, some with Alzheimer's and dementia. This is a population around the country that should be put in a separate place that should be consisting of nurses and doctors, pretty much like a nursing home, maybe a prison nursing home. But it has to be a situation where they're getting to be treated in their last days of living in this world. They should be treated like human beings, getting the proper treatment. I want to say something. I don't know who your contracted provider is in Missouri, but I know WellPath is a contracted provider in 36 states. And their founder is actually in prison now, or heading to prison. His case has been going on for some time, and they say he'll get at least 5 years for a lot of corruption and bribery and a lot of fraudulent activities. A lot of the providers they have are inexperienced, are not licensed to do a lot of the things they're doing. So there are over 1,200 lawsuits which were filed against them. So if you can, the next time you come on, I'd appreciate it if you can find out who your contracted provider is in Missouri.
Oh, I can give you that information. The contract provider for Missouri is Centurion.
Okay, Centurion. So it's not with WellPath. Okay. I will check on that one. I'd like to know more about Centurion as well.
There was a contractor prior to them called Horizon, and the Arthur Project people.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Filed a class action suit against them because they wasn't treating people with hepatitis C, and they won the lawsuit. And when they left and Centurion took the contract, they agreed to continue with the treatment. So there's a lot of people that are now getting treated for hepatitis C that normally they wouldn't have got treated for. And I witnessed a lot of people die from that because they couldn't get treatment.
Yeah,
and now you're not seeing that people die from hepatitis C anymore like it was 10 years ago or 5 years ago even.
That's good. That
the treatment has improved a little bit. There's still some work to be done when it comes to people's health, but for the most part, these people are pretty good. As long as you are following your HSRs and you're following up and you're going to your appointments, they will, do what needs to be done.
Okay, that's good to know.
So Missouri's got a fairly decent healthcare, a lot better than it was. So there's improvement there, and that's a positive thing.
That's good to know. So these programs that you men are working on with these soon to be released, this is awesome that you're doing all of this. And I think somebody Reginald mentioned earlier or previously about the anger management. You're working on that with some of the clients that you're working with, incarcerated clients that are going to be coming out.
We have a self-esteem class, and they're getting ready to start an anger management class.
I want to say with the self-esteem class and also with those that have anger management as well, there's a lot of people who were, prior to going to prison, who were victims themselves, some violated as children, some adolescents. There's a lot of things that people don't realize with these incarcerated individuals. And a lot of them go into prison because they have no longer been able to cope. Their resilience has been shattered because it only takes one or two things further to cause them to break. And a lot of people need to think about body language. This is something people don't look at. When people are in the communities, a lot of people that are depressed, a lot of people that have something that has happened to them in their past, they will walk a lot of times with their heads down, with their hands down by their side. A lot of them are going to be very particular about who they trust and who they talk to. A lot of them are afraid to let their guards down. And once they let their guard down, if they let their guard down to the wrong person and they're hurt again, that's where their resilience is shattered. And that's where a lot of times people cause crimes, become offenders, from victimized to offenders.
Yeah. I see a lot of guys that are in the program, and if you watch them, they will give you tells when they're feeling insecure or when they're feeling uncomfortable, and it's very noticeable that some of these guys have had some horrific experiences on the street, and they come in here, and it's hard for them to just open up and say, this is what happened to me, and these are my problems, and this is what I'm trying to get over. And so we take, every case.
Good.
And we will work with that individual until we get a breakthrough. And when one facilitator gets wore down, which it happens. I mean, we're human. It's the thing where you're like, I've been with this guy for a month, and I'm tired. I need to take a break from it. And then the next facilitator will step up and work on him and from a fresh perspective and probably get the breakthrough that the guy needs in order for him to progress to the next phase in reentry. Because these guys are going home that we are facilitating their a year or less, and a number of the things that some of these guys, they have pending charges. And that's another one of the things that I do. We'll set them down, and what are your charges? Do we file a 180-day writ? You got traffic tickets and those sort of things. And we try to resolve these problems before they get released, because they get released and they go back to the county jail, and it just, the process starts all over again, and it's not what we want.
No.
We want them to be able to have a fresh start. And there's a good thing going on at this prison. When I was at Crossroads Correctional Center, they didn't have a reentry program. So this one here is basically acting as the model for the ones to come. And once we set this model, then it can be franchised out like a McDonald's. And we can say, here's the floor plan, guys. Get at it.
I would love to know any prisons around the country that are doing good. I'd like to know so that we can support them and that we can promote them on the show. Because right now what we promote is Norway being the role model for prisons throughout the world. We promote the prisons in Norway, in Amsterdam, and a lot of these in France, in Germany. We promote these prisons because we actually have people coming on and talking about what they do and the good that they do. And one of the things they mention is that they treat the prisoners like human beings. They, Franz Dahl, a 27-year warden, no, he's not a warden now. He works with the United Nations. He works with the Ministry of Psychiatry. He's advocating with advocates in Texas. He's from Amsterdam. And he himself, as a warden, would periodically go around and talk to some of the prisoners when he was a warden. And he said that that's the best way to treat them like human beings, to treat them, call them by first name, not by numbers. And he said the success that the staff will find so much better if they respect the incarcerated and they treat them like human beings. And this is what we need in this country. We need people that are working for the Department of Corrections, for the prisons, to treat their individuals, the incarcerated, like human beings. And I'm sure they'll get much success. But I'd like to give credit to any prison where the inmates, the incarcerated individuals and the staff are having some good communication, where the prison is promoting good programs and allowing people in prison to take the lead in some of these programs. Just what you're doing now. I'd like to know, whenever this happens, I'm telling anybody to let us know. And we would love to be able to talk with somebody from that prison, or we'd like to be able to at least support them in the good that they are doing. It's very rare.
That's a good point. Just to reiterate on that is,
this call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
I've heard from several staff members that they're going to change our marker from offender to resident, and that the staff members will be able to interact with us more, like send out play game of chess or cards or whatever. They don't really do that now, but I think they're getting these ideas from Norway, as you had said, and they're starting to see that this is the way to go.
Franz Dahl, as I said, the 47-year former warden, he has said himself that he'd be willing to come to the United States and speak before legislature, to speak at the prisons, to speak in the universities. Wherever they would like him to speak, he would be willing to come here and speak with all of them, including the incarcerated. This man is an expert. He's an expert in what he does. And he's been acknowledged. He's involved with even the International Red Cross. He's involved with all of these organizations, highly respected, and is willing to come here to talk about exactly what you just said, how to improve in this country, how to lower the recidivism rate, how to allow prisoners to be released, and how to work with them prior to. And you guys are doing that with some of the people that are coming out soon to be released now. So talk to your wardens, commissioners, or whatever they want to be called. Talk to them about it and try to have them speak or invite these people from across the pond to come here and talk to them. They're willing to do it. Their recidivism rate is low to nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, well, my time's about up, so I want to thank you guys for your time, and thank you for doing this podcast.
You did it. I just interfered too much. But then,
okay.
Zachary, thank you. I want to thank you so much, and I want to thank Reginald and the rest of them. And if they have anything else they want to talk about, let them come on, because I scheduled it for another half hour if anybody wants to say anything.
Okay, well, here he is right now. You can talk to him about that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, Leona.
Yes, Reginald.
I took
up a lot of the time asking questions and giving my own feedback, but you still have, if you want, you still have about a half an hour. If you want to give the audience your information, how they can get in touch, how they can help, whatever the case may be, feel free to do it.
Once again, my name is Reginald Clemens. Well, my inmate number is 990102, 990102. If you would like to offer some aid and assistance when it comes to the phone calls, and because I have to pay 5 cents a minute for these phone calls, and they only give us $7.50 a month. So it is very hard for us to overcome these situations and circumstances. It is very hard for us to generate resources and everything. So we have to pay for our own hygiene and our own stationery, and we have to supplement the food out of the kitchen. So it creates a tight
budget.
Thank
you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Okay. Hopefully he'll be calling back. Again, audience, I want to thank you all for listening in. You know, it takes people that are listening. And if you're listening, then you're one of them. It takes people with a heart and people with concern and people that are motivated to listen, even to call in, to ask questions, to do all these things. And I'm hoping whatever you learn that you'll be able to share with others so that others will know what does go on behind these prison walls. We will hear from the Reginald again and again. Please listen, our audience. This is very frustrating too, hearing these recorded all the time.
Thank you for using.
Okay.
You may start the conversation now.
Okay, Reginald, please finish where you left off. And you know, these recordings are ridiculous. You know, the way they do things, and it doesn't need to be. But again, that's the system.
Yes, it's very hard when it comes to, it's strenuous when it comes to resources. This is something, once again, that we as inmates are initiating when it comes to these interviews and the show Reginald Clemens speaks on Reentry 2030, to try and inform the public of what it is we're trying to do to help ourselves and help make society safer, to help individuals leave prison better than they came to prison. And we feel like the more awareness we can generate, the more support we can have in our effort in trying to do something good. So, and again, in order to help me out and make any contributions that will be greatly appreciated, you can go to JPay. Get on the internet, go to JPay or JPay.com and put in Reginald Clemens 990102. That's my register number. And any help would be greatly appreciated. I haven't been asking for help, but over the past year, it's become very much of a strain. And whatever help would be greatly appreciated, $5, $10, that those donations will go towards continuing to help push this show, Reginald Clemens Speak on Reentry 2030, when it comes to our efforts for criminal justice reform. Now, with that out the way, and not really without that out the way, because it is something that we need on a continuous basis. And I hope that you enjoy these shows and that you find them very informative and give you a new perspective and insight into the minds of prisoners and the minds of rehabilitated criminals. Because we know what criminals look like coming to prison, where after committing heinous acts, and what the crime rate looks like in society, and the intended purpose of to curb the crime rate. Well, we're trying to help fulfill that intended purpose of curbing the crime rate. We're trying to help others find their way out of the darkness and come in out of the cold and begin to be rehabilitated from gang violence, from drug addiction, from a history of abuse, from generational criminality. Because some people who are raised in criminal families, criminal enterprises, continue on with that criminality, just like people with substance abuse problems. So how do we break that cycle? How do we break the cycle of domestic violence and abuse? Because people who abuse their children a lot of times were abused as children. So, and that's where we're working here to help others reclaim their humanity, become family-oriented individuals, and reintroduce people back into society as wholesome, helpful, responsible, productive members of society. And the mantra of the program is to become a more responsible, productive member of the community. And I added the wholesome part, right? Because anybody can live in a house. But a house is not a home just because there's people living there. We have to turn a house into a home with the warmness, the caring, and the nurturing, and the discipline, the tough love. And that's something that we offer prisoners. That's something we offer criminals on their way out of the door.
A correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
And we would like for this to become something that the Department of Corrections see as such a benefit, to the extent that it will help them restructure the criminal justice system when it comes to crime and punishment, so that it won't be crime and punishment, it'll be crime and rehabilitation. Because there's no tough love in the streets. You won't get the tough love in the streets that you get here in this program in Reentry 2030. Because here in Reentry 2030, we instill discipline, we enforce rules, we constantly try to manage the noise level and keep the noise level down. We try to constantly have individuals clean up their cell, take care of their personal hygiene. We don't, and then we try not to call the cell cells, we try to call them rooms. So an individual won't, they take a little bit more pride in their room. And it's a proven fact that when an individual improves their hygiene and improves their living conditions and environment, when they start cleaning up behind themselves, it reduces stress and depression. And that's the name, because that is signs of depression when a person stops taking care of their hygiene, start letting themselves go, you know, stop shaving and not taking care of their hair, and start having a body odor, start wearing dirty socks and dingy clothes, and well, you get the picture. And that's something that we watch for, and we look to encourage a person to get their act together, get their clothes and everything in order, take showers on a daily basis, groom themselves, clean their rooms up. And this is something that takes constant vigilant reminders, constant vigilant observation, constant vigilant counseling, and listening to sometimes listening to a person for hours as they try to flesh out what it is in their past that is hurting them or bothering them, or what is it that has them depressed, or what is it that has them stressed out. It's like I've been working with a client who he has some very serious issues when it comes to depression and suppressing his emotion and with inferiority complex and seeking acceptance of others by any means. And I've been counseling him and other individuals have been counseling him. We've all been counseling him and trying to help him reattach to his heart and attach his mind to his heart. Because when an individual loses touch with their heart and their mind, an individual can lose their soul and lose themselves and wander in the distance like a drifting spirit in the wind. Sorry to get philosophical, but you get the picture. And counseling this individual takes time, takes days, takes weeks, takes revisiting and remembering their habits. One of the things I encourage this particular individual to do is for them to ask 10 questions a day. How, when, what, where, why? How, when, what, where, why? Ask 10 questions a day of 10 different people. And I constantly ask him, what 10 questions did you ask today? What 10 questions did you ask today? And I ask him to read and pay attention to other people's body language. I don't tell him why I'm telling him to do this, but one of the reasons, read the point of this exercise when it comes to his inferiority complex, is for him to begin to understand other people have flaws too. And for him to also engage people and get comfortable asking people questions so that he can find out what people think and what people feel and what the problem is and open up the doors of communication so he can begin to understand that he's not the only one that's flawed. Other people have flaws and that his assumptions or presumptions about what someone thinks might be inaccurate. And now he can just, then that'll encourage him to just go ask a person if that's what they meant or how do they feel or why did they do what they did. Who, when, what, where, why, and how. So, and this is the type of work that we do. And it's not easy work. It's tedious work. And it takes a lot of vigilance, takes a lot of sincere passion and love. And one thing about love, the universal force of love is a never-ending fountain of truth. The universal force of love never runs out. You tap into it and enjoy it and let it flow through your heart, your spirit, and your words, and your sincerity, and the universal force of love will carry you through. And it'll truly touch other people. And it touched people regardless of whether or not they want you to reach them or not. All because of the depth of sincerity that love brings. I thank you all. And once again, I thank you, Leona, for giving us the opportunity to share this information, to share with people the humanity of prisoners who are incarcerated and how much we try and how much we're fighting for criminal justice reform on this end in the right way.
Before you leave, can I just make one statement?
Yes.
You acknowledge the mistakes that are made by the incarcerated, and you talk about the different reasons why people are incarcerated, or you wonder why we have people incarcerated. I just want to say real quickly before you go, Reginald, and before the show closes, we have people all over the country that have done wrong. We have mass incarceration. But let's not forget one thing. We have a government right now that we have to also blame because they could have implemented programs around the country, preventative and post. They could have established facilities for the mentally ill, for the drug addicted. They could have established opportunities, facilities for people that have the anger management, people that have been violated, and people that have been victims in the community. Because our government did not provide the resources, because they themselves came from backgrounds where they were never in the position that any of you were in, or any of us in the average citizen community world. So let's not forget that our government could be preventing and could have prevented a lot of downfalls of a lot of their citizens in this country. And when citizens like yourselves are putting together programs to try to help those, even though you are in a position where you are all serving life sentencing, that you deserve credit. And I'm the one that suggested that Reginald reach out to the community to help fund these calls that they make to get their messages out. So I'm asking everyone in the audience,
from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Even if you, each and every one of you, just donate $1 or $2 towards these calls that they are making to be able to talk to everybody about what they do and about what they're trying to do. And all of you know that I am correct, because we know we have a government right now that's so divided, and we're going to have a government shutdown, as I say, because we have children in our government running the country. And all of you at some point in time are going to be affected by their ineffectiveness and by their childish behavior, dividing people in this country rather than united, and not even being able to have a bipartisan government to work with the Democrats as well as the Republicans. So please, as I say, please try to contribute to the incarcerated individuals that are able to come on and speak about these things. And Reginald, I thank you so much for you and your team coming on to talk about the Reentry 2030. And I thank you also coming on and talking about it, knowing that all of you are serving a life sentence. And right now, a very uncertain of your futures in the release world. So I keep all of you in prayer, and I hope the audience will do it as well. Thank you so much for coming on, and I'll let you close.
Yes, and I thank you all for tuning in and listening to Reginald Clemens speak on Reentry 2030. Again, my name is Reginald Clemens. My inmate register number is 990102. That's 990102. You can go to jpay.com. And you should be able to find me amongst a list of inmates in the Missouri Department of Corrections. I am presently at Jefferson City Correctional Center. I'm a Missouri prisoner at Jefferson City Correctional Center.
Can you give the address as well in case they want to write?
Then the address is 8200 No More Victims Row. That's 8200 No More Victims Row, Jefferson City, Missouri, 65101. Sorry, 65101. That's Jefferson City, Missouri, 65101. I apologize for stammering, but that's the address again. And my name is Reginald Clemens. My registered number is 990102. You can go to jpay.com, located at Jefferson City Correctional Center. The address is 8200 No More Victims Row, Jefferson City, Missouri, 65101.
And the spelling of your last name?
C-L-E-M-O-N-S. C-L-E-M-O-N-S.
Thank you, Reginald. And I want to thank your team as well. You guys are doing an excellent job. And again, I truly appreciate the work you're trying to do, the work you are doing. And again, always remember there's a higher power than anyone that knows that we've all been sinners. And he forgave Moses, King David, and also Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, all who had murdered. He forgave them all and used them in a big way. And I believe I believe he's using all of you as well.
And the team that we have here is a very high quality group of inmates. and it's 20 of us, and we all bring something different to the table. We all bring some birth of experience and knowledge, and we are able to reach just about any prisoner because it's 20 of us, and each one of us have a different approach, a different demeanor, but we all have the same goal and objective. That's to see people get out of prison and stay out of prison. Because I know I personally hate seeing people come back to prison. And I thank you. Please support us. And please continue to listen to the shows. And please call in and ask questions. Please call in and ask questions. So we need comments, questions, criticisms, and encouragement.
You know, there's very few role models out in the communities today. And these young people, when they see somebody walking around in a suit and talking about the problems in the communities, they're not going to listen to them or look at them because these people are walking around in a suit with their heads up in the air most of the time. But to be able to talk to people that you relate to, and these kids out in the street today, these adolescents, the youth that are out there committing crimes, if somebody was to talk to them that has spent time inside and came out and turned their lives around and talk to them about what they don't want to do, I'm sure these kids would look up to you, they would respect you, and they would listen to what you're saying. And that's what we're missing in the streets today. We're missing the role models that should be out there talking to these kids. There was a pastor.
You have 1 minute left.
There was a pastor from Boston one day. I was so frustrated when I heard him say what he did. And he was talking about these young thugs. This is supposed to be a man of God, should be out there talking to these kids. And he's talking about these thugs as though he was some kind of big shot in the community. People might wear the cloth, but until they get out there and start working with these individuals in the street, until they start going into the prisons to meet with the incarcerated, to me, they're not doing God's work. And I will close it.
I believe we have to embrace each other as human beings. You're going to quote.
Pardon?
Were you going to quote somebody?
No, I was just going to say, I'm going to let you end it because the recording just came on. They're going to terminate you in a minute.
I love you all. Put me in your prayers. Put all of us in your prayers. And we'll keep on calling as long as we possibly can on Mondays from 4:30 to 5:30.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
5:30 Eastern Daylight Time. Every Monday will be Reginald Clemens and his team on speaking on Reentry 2030 and other issues as you have seen and heard. But I want to thank all of you once again for listening in. We're living at a time now where we have to start showing some forgiveness. We have all these wars going on all over the country. And unfortunately, the two cultures, the two races that are destroying their properties, their lands, and one another, are the two that God started out with in this world, the Jews and the Arabs, two siblings that were in the womb of Isaac and Rebekah, two nations that were prophesied as being two nations in Rebekah's womb. And these are the two nations that are destroying the land that God created, that are destroying one another instead of showing some kind of loyalty to our Creator. This world is being torn apart because people do not want to take time out to at least understand what's going on. People taking sides with two nations that came about from the very beginning, two nations that need to stop what they're doing and stop being proud of who they are. We need to start looking at our own governments in this Western world who are getting involved in things they should not get involved in when their own country is falling apart, when they should be focused on what's happening in this country. They're interfering with cultures and nations that have been at war with one another since the beginning. Let God take care of these two nations. And people from the Western world, our government, they need to focus on their own country at this end of the world. Because that's showing ignorance and it's showing disloyalty. to the higher power that put them in positions they're in to take care of his people. And we also have to look at these individuals behind those prison walls that have stumbled. They were let down by someone. It could be their parents, but the parents alone are not going to stumble somebody. It could be the people in the communities that have all these organizations that claim to be doing so much to prevent things like this happening. People are so busy trying to be somebody they're not, trying to please their peers who have more than the less fortunate, trying to fulfill their needs, their personal needs, because they are so insecure themselves. We need to look at what's going on around us. We need to look right now at a former president that's trying to stay out of prison, at a current president that's trying to protect his own. We have to look at, as this is in Exodus 23, chapter 23, verses 1 to 3, do not go with the multitude to do evil. And that's exactly what's happening. Too many people in this world today, especially in this country, are going with the multitude to do evil. Open your Bibles and read some of it, because maybe if you do, you will understand that these things were all prophesied. We cannot change what has already been prophesied. Go to 2 Timothy chapter 3, starting at verse 1. Go to 2 Peter chapter 3, starting at verse 1. You will see exactly what was predicted. But let's go back to those who are unfortunately stumbled and incarcerated, being put to death, only to find that many of them after, months and years after, were found to be innocent. Whoever focuses on the death penalty, whoever wants the death penalty, whoever promoted it, whoever voted for it, is just as guilty as anybody that's in prison serving life and life without parole sentences for a murder. Let's face it. We are at a time now where we have to make some changes, some positive changes. It said the next destruction would not be by flood, but by fire. We have the threat right now of nuclear weapons and a third world war, which will destroy everything. We have the climate change. We have the fires in Hawaii and Canada and California and all over the place. Think about it. I hope and pray that all of you will try to come on the show sometime and ask questions. Make because that's the only way change is going to be made. And if you disagree with something or what someone is saying, no problem. I welcome criticism. I welcome anything that is questionable to you, whether in agreement or disagreement. So I ask everybody to please have a nice day. Again, tomorrow at 2 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, I will be having on with us again, 12 o'clock Eastern Time, Dave Van Veen and Marika Schoen-Gils from the Netherlands. They will be talking about their experiences, one as a former prisoner and one as a police officer, in the book called Unknown. They will be talking about the comparison as well between their country and their country's penal system, prison system, in comparison to ours in the United States. Tomorrow at 5:30 p.m., I will be interviewing Rita Williams, who is the vice presidential with Andy Williams Jr. Mr. Williams will not be on with us tomorrow due to his schedule, but Rita Williams, vice presidential elect, will be on with us at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I look forward to all of you listening in, and we are now going to end this episode. Thank you so much.